Our presenter this morning is Dr. says Dr. Randall Price, but somebody wrote Randy Price up here on the board. So, he's a renowned psychologist in Texas and in Oklahoma, and I think Dr. Price, if I'm not wrong, has testified in a number of high-profile cases in Texas, death penalty cases. He is certified in forensic psychology and neuropsychology, whatever that is. He practices in Dallas, and he's going to talk to us this morning about the aspects of hoarding. Dr. Price?
Well, thank you very much. I'm really glad to be here. I'm sorry to bring such an unpleasant topic to you first thing in the morning. And I say unpleasant, I mean it can be unpleasant. As I understand it, the way these hoarding cases would come to your courts would be in terms of city codes about safety and a nuisance and that sort of thing. And you will see on the slides, I have a colleague that was actually the one that put these slides together and has taught this course in the past. It's before I get started, if you would, please, if you know personally of a case of a hoarder, either not necessarily in your court, but in your family or neighborhood or anything, if you've had personal knowledge of a case of a hoarder, would you hold up your hand for me for just a second? And I just want to count them to 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20. Wow. Usually in groups, at least a third of the people in the room, in any group, have personal knowledge of a hoarder. It was a little more than that in here, and I suspect that maybe some of that could have been in your courts, but almost everybody has some knowledge personally of this. I have at least three things that come to mind for me. It's the first was my Uncle Howard, his backyard was completely filled with automobiles, bicycles, barbecue pits, lawnmowers, iron gates, pieces of fence, and his attic was completely filled with newspapers and magazines. Shortly before he died, the ceiling in one of the rooms caved in. Because of the weight of the magazines and the newspapers, which are really common hoarding objects, and we'll talk about that in just a second. The second one, I have a house in Fort Worth and a condo in Dallas, and in the condo that I have in Dallas, which I've had for a long time, the guy that lives right next door to me is a hoarder. We have had several interactions concerning this. I've called all sorts of agencies. Last year there was a roach infestation in his place, and the smell in the summer is just absolutely disgusting. With the roaches, I brought out an exterminator, and I told him that I was going to have this exterminator exterminate his place. And he said, well, I really can't afford it. And I said, I'm paying for it. And the exterminator, which you can imagine exterminators have probably seen some things that are pretty disgusting. He came out and said it was one of the worst infestations he'd ever seen. So I continually, from the outside you can't tell, but sometimes the stuff will spill out to the area outside, and there'll be some phone books, and there's a ladder and some other things. Sometimes there would be a piece of furniture out there, and I would say, Lee, this is not a storage unit out here. You have to clean this stuff up. I've called the owners of his. It's a continual thing. The third thing, I had a case in Oklahoma of a young guy who was a hoarder. He had a lot of other problems, including very, very ADHD, maybe manic even. He couldn't keep a job. He fancied himself an artist and an inventor, and he lived with his parents. And he spent his days hunting for junk. He spent his days dumpster diving and finding anything that was made out of metal or anything that had an interesting shape, and the objects had unusual attraction to him. And it was part of it was that he was going to use them either in some invention he had or some artwork. And in fact, he had there was some artwork that he had done with some welding of different pieces of junk that it was all right, I suppose. Well, his parents, as the stuff piled up in the backyard, he filled up a room. He had to move to another part of the house, spilled out in the yard. His parents said, if you're going to live here, you have to clean this up. He became increasingly agitated over his parents' insistence that he clean this up. And so then his father, after he had just retired, and so he started cleaning up himself. And this guy was very hard for him. Another term for hoarding that sometimes is used is disposophobia, afraid to throw something away. And he became very, very agitated and got into a conflict with his father and hit his father. And his father, rather than escalate it, he got in the car and left, and he called the police. The police came to the house because the father was concerned about his wife there. And as the police came up, the young guy gathered a few firearms, went to the garage where he drilled a hole quickly through the garage door and started shooting at the police officers and hit one of them. Luckily, he wasn't injured badly. I was hired by the family's attorney for this guy. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity, and he is in a psychiatric facility where he's been for years now. All of us have some personal examples of this. All of us form attachments to objects. Everyone in this room has certain objects that you really are emotionally attached to. Something your father had, something that was given to you, something that you found or bought when you went on a trip. And even some of us have collections of things, and I'll talk about that in a second. And, of course, a lot of us have attachment to animals. So if you see a little bit of yourself in there, it's not usually the same thing. It's because it's isn't impairing us. It's not interfering in our lives or the lives of others. Now, I'm really the anti-hoarder of this group, I suppose. I hardly have any clutter. I'm almost now completely without paper in my office. It's all been scanned. I throw things away very easily. I'm the type that goes to the closet, and if I hadn't had on an article of clothing in a year, I'd get rid of it. But, I have a collection of pocket knives and a collection of fountain pens, but they're have a theme, and they're organized. And it doesn't impair me in any way. So let's start off by a little. I
I want you to imagine with me, if you can, that you have been stuck, trapped in a space that is so disgusting and full of junk that you can barely walk, much less find a clean place to lay your head. We're going to take you inside a home so cluttered, so disturbing, that our producers almost passed out from the stench of stale, rotting food. Now, flies fill the kitchen. There are more than 7 refrigerators and freezers full of moldy food, spoiled food piled on every shelf, stuffed into every drawer. Now, you're about to meet a family whose lifestyle behind closed doors is shocking. And the outside world has no idea that there are 3 children trapped in this chaos. Now, just a few years ago, they appeared to have a nice life. Nancy was a nurse. Bob, a corporate attorney. But now this family needs to be rescued from their own unbelievable living situation. Take a look.
My friend Nancy is a pathological hoarder. Outside, things look normal. Inside, things look like a different planet.
I have a hard time throwing anything out because of some attachment I have to it.
We might need this for something. This is a good container.
The piles and piles of junk make it uninhabitable for any human being.
The environment in which they live is intolerable.
This is the dining room that we last ate in 2 Christmases ago.
It doesn't feel like a normal home. My house is a pigsty. I don't know what a lot of this stuff is.
My oldest daughter has tried several times to help me clean them. I start getting upset if she's throwing too much away. So I just get really stressed out.
It smells like animals and trash.
Currently, my boyfriend Bob and I have a condo full of items and a $350,000 house that is just packed.
The house is 3,000 square feet. We never moved into the house because it's the same as our condo in that it's overstuffed with materials.
I worry about my brother and my sister a lot. They don't really know anything else besides a messy house. The living room in my house is more of my brother and my sister's room. One sleeps on this side and the other sleeps on that side.
I sleep down here because there's only a certain amount of rooms.
And my sister's room is really messy.
I don't really like my room because my cats go to the bathroom in there.
My sister's tried to clean her room.
My mom, she tells me not to clean my room because she wants to do it, but we usually never get around to doing it.
And this is my room. I would say this is probably the safe haven in the house.
I've tried to clean, but I can't even find a place to begin. My favorite things to collect are plastic containers, old mail, magazines, cookbooks, food.
The worst thing that Nancy hoards is food. Food that is unedible, that has been in her refrigerator probably for years.
I think that's bad fish. It's probably 2 weeks old. The kids kind of know this is the safe area. There's a lot of food all over the house because I have this fear of running out of food.
I always just shake my head and say, Nancy, we don't need any more food.
These are cookies that should have been thrown out probably years ago. They look like they fossilized. But I'm actually going to throw those away. And that's a major step for me. Between the house and the condo, I have 7 refrigerators and freezers.
1 in our kitchen. I would never eat anything out of this refrigerator. 2 in our garage. There's another freezer down here. When my mom can't fit any more food in those refrigerators, she resorts to multiple coolers that she has on our porch.
Oh my God.
We also have 4 refrigerators at our other house.
Those are the groceries from a couple days ago. Some of the things were frozen. I left them in the car, which I do especially in the winter because it'll stay cold because I have no room in my refrigerator or freezers to put anything.
Her kids are absolutely miserable with what is going on around them.
There's a lot of different kinds of bugs in my kitchen because there's so much old food in here that she won't throw out.
I've had a problem with meal moths. They make these webs and then they propagate the species like you wouldn't believe. And they're just, you know, we just keep swatting them.
And it's getting worse and worse. That's a tragedy.
Okay. If there's, you know, I would like to hear of some case that's come to your court and how it came to your court. Does somebody have an example that they could share and how it came to court? Yes, sir. And so who is it that brought the case to your court? Mm-hmm. And what's the code that was applicable in that case? Accumulated items. See, I don't know that one. It's not one that I... No. Yeah. Yeah. And... It's a very difficult thing to understand, I think. And that the one thing that I can kind of wrap my head around is after it gets to this point, if you've ever had any project like when a parent passes away and you have to clean their house out, even though it's not like this, still, that is such a huge project that it was difficult to start for me, I know, because it was just going to be so time-consuming, and where to start, it was overwhelming. And I can kind of understand that point. After it gets to this, that they need some outside help to be able to complete the cleanup, I think. So hoarding is the excessive collection and retention of things or animals until they interfere with day-to-day functions such as home, health, family, work, and social life. As you can see, example, cooking, impossible. Cleaning, impossible. Hygiene, sanitation, sleeping. The two children were sleeping on the same couch. There was no other place to sleep. In extreme case, injuries can happen because there's just these little pathways down the halls. Exits can be blocked. Of course, the infestation, fires, and people have died because of their... this problem. It is a multifaceted problem, and I think it is one that's difficult for us to understand. It's not really a particular mental disorder. It's not in the DSM-4. That's the guide that I have to use for mental disorders. There are some traits that some of the people that are studying this have come up with. The acquisition of and failure to discard a large number of possessions that appear to be useless or of limited value. I've seen one case where the articles were useful and had value and had never been taken out of the packages. It was and associated to compulsive shopping and just buying stuff, and going out to shop was the thrill, and so there was a positive emotion attached to that, but then they weren't ever even, it's possessing them, it's not using them, it's possessing the objects. Living spaces sufficiently cluttered as to preclude activities for which those spaces were designed, and the whole house becomes useless, as you can see in the tape and in his example. Significant impairment in functioning caused by the hoard, these people are not happy with this situation. It is disturbing to them, but they just get to where they can't do anything about it. And a reluctance or inability to return borrowed items, impulsive acquisitiveness could lead to kleptomania or stealing. The shoppers, who then, after a time, have... credit cards are completely taken and maxed out, and on a fixed income may begin to shoplift to acquire new objects. But hoarding is not, and it's the person says, being having things in a mess. That I didn't write that. I don't have things in a mess. But that was Stephen. Or collecting a bunch of stuff, that's the same thing. having a lot of trash in your backyard, a filthy, cluttered house, simply having too many of something, being a big-time animal lover. Now, this issue of collecting, let me talk about that for just a second, just so we make a clear distinction between collecting and hoarding. Through history and in all cultures, people collect things. In the United States, a third of people in the United States have a collection of something. Two-thirds of all households have a collector in the house. A collection, obviously, is a set of objects that have a cohesive theme. Pocket knives, Life magazines, some theme. It's selective items that are actively acquired. Collectors, part of the enjoyment is finding them. So if they travel and they collect ceramic turtles, if they travel, they're in every store trying to find a ceramic turtle from that place that they're traveling to. So it has a positive emotion attached to this. The collected items are then taken out of their typical use. Of course, I mean, I have many pocket knives that have never cut anything. And they're organized. Oftentimes they're displayed or in some way categorized or organized. It's one of the things we see with a hoarder is they have a deficiency in being able to separate things, organize them in a cohesive kind of a way. And sometimes a collector thinks this collection is really important and they want to, it's kind of like it's a legacy and they want to pass it on to their child, or if it's a collection of art, pass it on to the world. But rather, hoarding is excessive and unreasonable keeping things, either animals or objects, in a way that significantly impairs or disrupts the day-to-day use of the residence. The need or desire to keep these objects is top priority, and other things are neglected, and that's where it becomes a safety issue, etc. Also, they frequently are, like in the case that I told you about, are resistant to change. And people say, I'll help you with this. And it's not that they like what their situation is that they're afraid, you know, that somebody's going to throw something away that they shouldn't throw away. And so they need to go through each of the objects themselves. It's complex and for a lot of things. It's usually not simply due to deprivation. You know, you think of it is that it's a person who at one time in their life they didn't have enough, and so now they want too much. But again, that's a little different. This is probably, I'm quite sure, the case with some of the of you. The Great Depression was a big event in my father's life. That was a real, he never forgot it. He hoarded some things, coffee, sugar, things. It wasn't unreasonable, and he used it. And I recall that, and I knew that he did that, and he'd find it on sale and things like that, too. After he passed away, I found a closet that was about, I don't know, I don't want to exaggerate, a fourth full of coffee, cans of coffee. But it was organized. He had an inventory. He would write the date he purchased it on the top of the coffee can, the plastic thing, and he circulated it, kind of a, it was the first in, first out inventory. So, it wasn't just keeping it. He just didn't want to run out, you know. That's different usually it's not due to being deprived of something early in life. It may be in some way related to being emotionally deprived at some time, and there's some comfort that comes from all this stuff, and it's an issue of safety. Sometimes they feel the best in their place, even though it's different with a lot of cases. It's not simply obsessive compulsive disorder, where you do things to reduce anxiety. Almost every attorney that I know and every forensic expert that I know is a little obsessive compulsive. We deal with details. We need to be able to find those details or to know those details. Become anxious as trial approaches. I get all the notes and put them in dividers and notebooks if I'm going to testify. That's different. I'm doing that to reduce the anxiety about testifying, and it's effective. It works. It's helping. It's not impairing my performance. It's benefiting it. Hoarding, like I said, involves positive and negative emotions. The shopping or the acquiring can become intensely pleasurable, even can be described as getting high. The young guy in Oklahoma loved the dumpster diving, the hunt. He would find something that somebody had thrown away that was valuable to him and was like a treasure. That's really all the objects that he found, it was like a treasure. But the anxiety for the hoarder comes from trying to clean it up and trying to throw anything out. And it's just the indecisiveness of that is a problem. And then also the negative emotion for the hoarder is the shame and the guilt that comes from other people finding out. The guy in the condo that's next to me, I've never, ever seen one person go into his condo except him. So this hoarding is not defined simply by the number of the possessions that they have, but how the acquisition and the management of the objects or the possession of them affects the owner and their life. Let's take a look at another clip here.
When you don't know that you're going to go, you don't think about what you're leaving behind. I have the advantage of knowing that my time is limited. I want my granddaughter to have memories, good memories of playing in this house and playing with me.
The worst that could happen would be that, mom dies and leaves a mess to us and we have to kind of go through it. I get terrified that with her condition, she dies in the house and we can't get to it.
Hi, Laura.
Come on in.
Thanks.
My name is Dr. Robin Zasio. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and I specialize in OCD and compulsive hoarding.
So
this is the living room.
Okay.
And
when you first walk in the house, the first experience is the overwhelming odor. When we went down to the basement was probably the worst house I've ever been in terms of the smell.
Ooh, ooh. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
This smell is overwhelming.
Yeah, it is.
What is this a combination of?
Dust, probably soot from the fireplace.
Okay.
And there's probably some animal poop.
I got to tell you, the smell of feces is overwhelming. That's probably what stands out the most for me.
It's one of the things I think everybody smells something different. Everything comes at you so fast, you don't pick out one thing.
to try to explain why, again, a little bit more about what are the dynamics here. Usually there's some kind of theme to the hoarder's thinking. Fear of waste, okay? The comfort and safety, okay? Or the kind of just in case I might need this. And this one's a little harder to understand, it's the allure of opportunity. They save all this stuff because there may be something in there that, you know, is going to turn the key to them in their life or to somebody else. They save an article because it has something that they know that somebody else might be able to benefit from. But the objects for the object hoarder, and then we'll go to the animal hoarder in a second, the objects for them are so rich in detail, and the intensity of their attachment goes way beyond ours. And the value that they attach to the objects is unaffected by the trouble it causes to have all of them. Every object is equally important to them. You know? And that's, again, the indecisiveness and the possession. Sometimes it gives them the feeling of being connected to the world. It's the possession of them. It's some kind of security. So the traits that we see in them... Yes, ma'am? How does one intervene? I'll come to that in a minute, okay? Okay. Some of the traits we see, oddly enough, is perfectionism. You know, you think a perfectionist as being really on top of things and really neat and taking care of details. But as a trait, sometimes perfectionism is crippling. You have to have the right time, right place, everything just in... the stars have to be right to complete a project, and so you never get started. Procrastination is probably most frequently caused by perfectionism. It's not quite the right time. I don't feel right. I need to do this first to get all these things in order. And they have these deficits, hoarders have these deficits in information processing, that the categorization, the sustained attention, the planning, the organization, and these powerful beliefs about the value of objects, and all objects are equally valuable. They also have a lot of denial. You saw in that clip an answer to the question, what's this smell? She said, well, it's probably some dust and probably some soot and from the fireplace, etc. And the lady there said, you know, it's feces. But they can be utterly in denial. It was last August when I confronted the guy that lives in the condo beside me. I said, Lee, the smell is disgusting. I've called and I haven't... I've called all kinds of people, and it's just that's what gets me, man. It's the roaches we can take care of. The smell, you got to do something about it. He said, I don't know why it smells like it does. And the exterminator I sent in there said he knew why it smelled like it did. I mean, it was just filthy and everything else. And he has, I don't know how many cats he has. I don't know. It's not a whole lot, but I'll see one occasionally there. In terms of objects and their thinking, let me give you a specific example, and then we will take a look at some profiles and go to the animal hoarding and then to the intervention. This keeping of newspapers, that's a real common thing with hoarders. They don't throw away the newspapers. Now, here's how this develops, how their thinking is. At first, they enjoy reading the newspaper, looking for an interesting article, cutting it out, throwing away the rest of the newspaper, and saving the articles for some future opportunity, either for themselves or for somebody else that they want to send it to, you know, or that it could be a valuable piece of information. Then that can become very time-consuming, so they begin to... look through the newspapers, cut out articles that look interesting, but don't take the time to read them, but save the articles. Then it goes to look through the newspaper, and if it has an interesting article in it, just save the whole thing. And then just save the whole thing because they don't have time to look through for the articles. So it's not an automatic thing. Like most things, it slowly develops, and then they just, of course, it gets so behind in it, they just begin saving the newspaper. Someday, my Uncle Howard, someday after he retired, he was going to read all those newspapers and magazines, which is totally crazy that he was never going to do that, of course. There are also to quickly look at. The Good Samaritan, the disabled or elderly person, cruel and neglectful person, and true hoarder. The Good Samaritan has some kind of motive that they're doing something that's good. They are trying to do a good thing. Usually it's animals. They're saving the animals. They're saving the cats from being euthanized. They're on a mission. And so it has a positive emotion for them. They're doing a good thing. In denial, the animals aren't being well taken care of. But they think, well, it's better than being dead and doing the best I can. Have this job that I was given. The disabled elderly person is usually not a hoarder, okay? They have decompensated through disability, age, isolation, and they just can't manage their life or possessions. They're afraid of intervention because they think it's going to mean they're going to go to a nursing home. So they don't want people to find out about this, and so they hide it, but they stop taking care of themselves. They don't pay the water bill. They don't have water, but they get by somehow. I don't know. They're usually, though, are capable of correcting the problem if they have some help, and that if they are convinced that somebody's not trying to put them in a nursing home or euthanize their pets, they will accept the intervention. The cruel, neglectful person they have some other reason that they're involved in this. Usually, again, this is an animal hoarder. The thing that comes to mind are the one with the puppy farms, that they're trying to make a buck. Or the cases that I've heard of with exotic animals, but they stop taking care of them. Oftentimes, it's because expensive. They're trying to make a profit here. The true hoarder, though, usually feels very threatened or insulated against any type of intervention. They truly believe they're improving the condition of the animals if they're an animal hoarder. They typically respond to intervention with hostility and disinterested, they are not sensitive to the effect it has on people around them. The Good Samaritan and elderly disabled person are fairly easy to resolve. Due to lack of ill intentions, the cruel and the neglectful typically requires enforcement, and the true hoarder requires special attention because of, it's their life. Their identity becomes their objects. Like I said, it's complicated. It can come from a lot of things. Intervention, citizens do report the properties, neighbors do complain. That being said, interior hoarding conditions are rarely discovered until an emergency arises. I called agencies in the city of Dallas and got very little much of a response after they asked me some questions. And I have no real evidence that anybody was in danger. They did send somebody out from the code enforcement, and it was during the day, and he was gone, and they left him a note to call them. That didn't work. So then, I mean, I'm thinking, okay, how can I get somebody to do something? So I called police and said I thought there was a dead person in there. I mean, it smelled that bad. They came out, and they didn't find a dead person, so they didn't do anything. So I really haven't gotten a lot of help on this. I'm sure that as compared to other cases, his is not really that bad. It's just, it's because it's next door to me that I'm concerned about it, I'm sure. Of course, this develops. There's even a scale about the level of hoarding that they've developed. And let's take a look at one more short clip here.
The strange phenomenon that many find simply unbelievable. Animal hoarding, it's called. These are people who are far more than simply pet lovers. No, they are truly obsessed by the need to obtain and keep pets, sometimes by the dozen, sometimes by owning 100 or more. Many of them choose to live in squalor rather than parting with their pets. Our Yunji Denise peered into this world and the psychological mindset of animal hoarders.
Olga Fedorov watched helplessly as last week investigators removed dozens of animals, dogs, cats, pigeons, even a fox, some alive, many dead, from her Philadelphia home, a place where she says the animals were well cared for.
I spare no expense. They're my babies. I have no husband or children to worry about. They were my children.
This shocking scene is all too common.
One of the biggest animal hoarding cases ever.
250 dogs rescued from a home in Polk County.
Pit bulls and more than 100 pigeons found living in filth.
Across the country, men, women, young and old, share an addiction unlike any other.
I look at it and just go, how did it get this way? How did I let it get this way?
The overwhelming need to collect and even control animals. The difference with animal hoarding is that this drug can love you back. This is Lolette. What started as a rescue center for strays is now a house teeming with nearly 300 cats.
I have a hard time saying no to a cat in need.
Every year, thousands of Americans hoard more than 250,000 animals. Animal lovers like Don.
How are you guys?
He began with one, two, then three cats, and now has more than 30.
One day you look down and you've got 30 pairs of eyes looking at you going, you're going to feed me?
Don overcame an addiction to methamphetamines and seemingly replaced one habit with another. And then there's Janice, with 97 dogs and 15 cats crowded into her tiny trailer. Janice began breeding Yorkshire Terriers, but she eventually added more breeds and stopped selling the puppies. She's lived like this for the last 12 years.
My dogs are like my kids.
Clover, what are you doing?
They're all sweet dogs. They're just incredible.
Caring for her kids is a full-time, exhausting job.
It's constantly all day long that I have to just keep going behind them and, you know, filling the water back up, picking the paper back up, you know, putting new paper down.
Still, the trailer is never truly clean nor quiet. Janice hasn't seen her grandchildren in months.
I mean, as much as I love my grandkids, and believe me, that is a lot, but, you know, I also love my dogs, too.
Who else is going to bed? Come on, Garrett. Come on, Cockroach.
You know, you've seen these guys grow up from puppies, you know, and taking care of them.
Come on, you're in.
It's her daughter, Lindsay, who eventually calls on Dr. Karen Cassidy to set up an intervention. The goal? Convince Janice to give up all but two dogs and one cat.
Honestly speaking, if you were looking for a home for an animal, so let's say you were running a pet shelter, would you pick your place? Oh, that'd be all right.
Here we go. Cat in the box.
It's a painful process. Humane Society volunteers fill an entire tractor trailer with animals as Janice learns to let go.
Felt like I was pulling on my heart.
It's like I wanted to give him one more hug goodbye.
It's been almost 4 months, but that moment is still tough to think about.
When you walked back into the house and those trucks pulled away and you saw all those empty cages, what was that like?
It was hard. It was very hard.
What were you feeling at that point?
I felt good for the dogs. I knew that I did what I had to do. And, you know, but it was hard because I loved them.
Janice has moved into her daughter's home with just one cat and two dogs and says her life is better, but she still misses those dogs.
I mean, that term, animal hoarder, do you think that applies to you?
No. No, I don't think that applies to me because it wasn't something that I chose to do.
Do you see the hoarding parallel of someone who collects, let's say, clothes or, I mean, you bought the initial dogs.
But I didn't go out and initially buy 100 dogs. So no, I don't see myself as an animal hoarder. No, I don't.
Even with 97 dogs?
No, because I got put in that situation.
That denial is typical.
It goes with every animal hoarder. They fail to understand that all their love is a good intention gone awry.
For Don, the threat of jail time finally forces him to surrender to animal control. Workers find dangerously high levels of ammonia from all the urine and several gruesome surprises. After cleaning and new carpets, he has his life back. Lolette also parts ways with her animals, 260 cats. Most are put up for adoption.
I felt that I could really trust them, so I let go of some cats that I did not plan to.
And then, today, Janice is focusing on life with her grandchildren, but she stopped seeing her therapist.
Janice would be likely to start rescuing more animals if she doesn't get help. Unfortunately, 100% of animal hoarders relapse if they don't receive treatment. And it's because it's painful for them to let go of the animals, because they feel like the animals give them perfect love, and that they give the animal perfect love. And that feels like the only way they can derive satisfaction in life.
You think you get enough love from two dogs in the same way that you got love from so many other dogs?
I get the same amount of love from each one of them. I can say that. Definitely unconditional love, because they love you no matter what.
When you're with these two, do you ever miss the others?
I always miss the others. I'll always miss them.
I'm Yanji Denise for Nightline in Fredericksburg, Maryland.
So this one is really, of course, the health hazards are greater. The intervention efforts are more problematic. Luckily, it's the minority of hoarding cases, but they're very dramatic. Frequently well on the at the core of this, one of the reasons that they're so resistant and why they're relapsing, like they're doing a good thing, and that with the animals they have a feeling of this, like she said, unconditional love from the animals. So complicated issue. A animal hoarder, any individual who possesses a large number of companion items, fails to provide adequate nutrition and veterinary care, keeps the animals in a severely overcrowded environment. She didn't believe she was an animal hoarder because she didn't go out and buy them or obtain them all at the same time. She was put in this position. You know, it's not her fault. It's extreme. It's the toxicity. It can really be extremely dangerous and a health hazard. A few facts here: 76% female, most unmarried, most live alone. I wonder why. 46% age 16 older. 65% keep cats. 60% dogs. 80% have dead or sick animals at home. 69% animal feces and urine. 60% are repeat offenders. The therapist in the previous clip said 100% will relapse. And it says in this study, anyway, that most inanimate objects as well. usually cats, dogs, etc. Average number of animals per case, 39, 100% recidivism after prosecution, and just some stats from a separate study. It's all kind of people. Though not completely universal, most animal hoarders live a rather solitary lifestyle and have always been collecting in their lives. And not recognizing the problem is part of the issue. Now, talk about intervention here. Check the time. The key word on this slide is multidisciplinary. I'd add something to that, and I'd say hoarders, whether it's object or animal hoarders, are not going to seek help on their own. They're not going to cooperate. And like many of the people that I evaluate, they don't think they're doing anything wrong. They don't think they're guilty. If anything is going to happen, it's because somebody, you, or some agency is going to make them do it. Sometimes family. It's like if you've ever been involved in intervention for a drug or alcohol abuser, that you know you got to have the hammer somewhere. This is not a choice now. If you don't do this, here's what's going to happen. You're going to jail. We're going to put you, there has to be a hammer, I think. And then, of course, the actual intervention needs to involve a lot of people, human health and social services, housing authorities, legislators, community health professionals, animal welfare professionals. If you've seen I don't know why, there's a fascination with this. And there's a lot of shows on TV that shows the cleanup. I don't know if you've seen that ever. But it's a serious deal. This is not like cleaning out my father's coffee. You know, I just gave that away to a bunch of people, and it was used, and there was no problem at all. This is dangerous to clean up. They have to be forced. The intervention, at least initially, has to be done with a hammer. This a program, a prevention team for animal hoarders from the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And in your community, hopefully you know some sources that you can turn to, at least for the initial intervention. The more people involved, the more effective it is. The more agencies involved, the more professionals involved, the bigger the hammer. I was involved with an intervention at the college where I have taught for 40 years, and it was with a friend of mine who was an anthropology professor, and he was an alcoholic. And the president, and he was really a good guy and a fantastic teacher, and the president of the college and I developed a program to intervene, and we got as many people together as we could, you know, all kinds of sources for him to obtain help, a program to go to, but we had a hammer. The president said, if you don't get sober, you don't have a job. And that job meant more to him than alcohol. That was about 25 years ago. He hadn't had a drink since. It was amazing how, I'm not going to say it was easy for him at all, but he never relapsed or anything because the job was more important to him than anything. He loved anthropology. He loved teaching. He loved the school. He loved the students. And it's when all of us said, that's what's going to happen. You're going to lose your job. It worked. So sometimes that will have the same effect about you're going to go to jail or you're going to pay a fine. I would tell the code enforcement folks, and I was on a case where a code enforcement officer was killed because he was enforcing some code. I don't know what it was now. And the guy in the house shot and killed him. You know, it can be, these people can be threatened, but you need a lot of people involved, and you need a hammer. Sometimes, after that, some kinds of psychopharmacological treatment can help. They have some evidence that some of the antidepressants, the SSRIs, can help with people with obsessive-compulsive behaviors. And it's not a cure, but it can help them to manage it. Generally, there's a consensus that psychotherapy is needed or counseling in conjunction with that. To address that denial, the delusional thinking, objects have that much, you know, how do rolls of, the cardboard center from toilet paper have any value? I mean, just that's a really, those kinds of things need to be confronted. A lot of confrontation involved here in the kind of therapy or counseling to change their thinking, and it's not easy. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Just in case. Some kind of MacGyver kind of thing, I guess, too, there. The question is, or the comment is that he was a collector, he was neat, but he saved everything, including the lint from the dryer. You know, a pathological attachment to objects, and the thinking there that needs to be confronted is that just-in-case thinking. All of us have that a little bit. I mean, you know, you have that extra something there just-in-case. And then the reason it's so difficult to stop that kind of thinking, think about some time. Because these are the thoughts that stand out. You had something, you threw it away, and then later you did need it. And you said, I had one of those, and I threw it away. Or you made me throw it away. I had that, and that would have come in so handy right now. So those isolated instances are intermittent reinforcement for that kind of thinking, which makes it difficult to change. Even if it's inexpensive, go buy another 6-inch washer or something. It didn't matter that you had one. It's, you know, cost 20 cents. But it's the point of it is they were right that one time. How about all the times you were wrong? You know, and you threw stuff away and you don't remember those times, right? You can't remember clothes that you threw out that you didn't like or didn't fit, you never had on. You don't remember those now. So that's the way the brain operates in terms of this thinking about that just in case as what the motivation is. Let's see where we stand. We're almost out of time, I know. All right. Any other questions, comments? We're almost out of time. No, that's a good example. I don't know. Can I ask you a few questions? do you use them sometimes? Three or four times a week. Does the possession of those 20 rods and reels and 5 tackle boxes interfere in your daily life in any way? Absolutely not. Does it interfere in somebody else's daily life? He's thinking. Is it a safety issue? Is it a health issue? Is there anybody upset with you about this? All right. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to make the distinction. The similarity with hoarding and collecting is all of us value some objects. If you use them, that's a really big thing. Well, Yeah. To block the exits. Yeah. Those are really good examples. Her example is just because they're going to make a tape of this, is an elderly lady, a hoarder, had a fire in her house, died because the firefighters couldn't get to her because of the clutter. That's what we're talking about. Yes, ma'am. I'll come right back to you. You know, I'd like to ask you the same thing. You've seen the efforts I've had and the guy that lives next door to me. I've called agencies, and they leave a note for him to call them. Any ideas? How can you as judges help to with fire marshals? If it's a child involved, calling Child Protective Services, that's, you know, supposedly in some, and this is probably cities, it's, you know, like Child and Elderly Protective Services, but probably not in smaller towns. So it's who was bringing him the food and handing it to him through the window? Oh, I see. Yes, if there's, and I'm going to come to you. The question is, can you have them committed? If there is someone that wants to begin an involuntary commitment procedure, or if they're taken to the hospital and a professional there discovers this, they can, because they're a danger to themselves, and it would be possible, yeah. They would need to be able to identify a psychiatric illness underlying it, and it seems like that would be pretty easy to do, but... sometimes it's not so easy. You have a comment or a... Okay.